Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Men's Voice. Here we are on a Sunday afternoon. Some of you have a nice weather and some of you are pretty cold, but we are glad you're with us and joining us for our conversation this Sunday. A lot has been going on. Let me just throw in that this is October 29th, so we'll talk a little bit about fathers and Halloween a little bit in the show, but we are, you know, there's so much going on. There's so much political. One of the things about this show is we would like to talk about things that deal with men and what we have in our minds about everyday news and those kinds of things. But the politics have just gotten out of control. So we're spending a lot of time talking about politics recently. So I want to start off with the opioid declaration that Trump did, saying that it was a crisis. It's a national health emergency. What do you think about that? Let's start with Bruce. What do you think about opioids being a national health emergency? Because I have some points I want to bring that someone told me, wanted to discuss with me, and I want to talk about them later. But first, let me get your opinion on what do you think about this, Bruce? Do you think it's actually one of the major things we should be talking about today?
I do, and I'm going to label it more to the word of drugs in general versus just opioids. Opioids are I don't mean disrespectful or light of the situation or the flavor of the month. It's either been this issue, this particular type, or another, or it'll be another in the future. I look at it from the standpoint, the reason it's always important and should always be at the top of our list is because I think drugs and drug addiction is there, and drug use, not just addiction, use as well, is to mask other problems, make us feel more comfortable, make us feel more at ease, take away the pain, erase the memories, whatever the case may be. And until we dig deeper into finding out why all that's happening and why we turn to drugs to mask all those problems, I think talking about the drugs is a good start, and it's trying to get at the root of the problem. So I don't think we can talk about and try and do enough work to try and solve our nation's drug problem. I think it's very critical.
All right. What about you, Don? What do you think about the President of the United States declaring opioid crisis?
Well, David, I've always felt that drugs were a major issue. It has been in my life because I've been recovering from drug and alcohol addiction the past 25 years in recovery and delivered. And the thing is, it was a problem then. As Bruce said, I masked feelings. I didn't want to feel. It was very popular in my community. And when I grew up, if you didn't smoke marijuana or use in some shape, form, or fashion, something was wrong with you. I saw a lot of my friends coming back from Vietnam addicted to alcohol and drugs, and it was very prevalent in the African-American community that I grew up in, and it's always been a problem in the African-American community, and now to see it cross the tracks, as I would say, in New Hampshire and Vermont, and have it noticed in white America and other nationalities, it's become an epidemic. It's always been an epidemic. And to have it come center, forefront, is good. We need to deal with it because the doctors have made a field day off of opiates and subscribing it to people. And it's got out of hand. So to see
right.
us deal with it, just say no won't work.
Right. Let me give you a skew on it that I got from a congresswoman who is a congresswoman from New York. And she's very upset with the president doing that because she said that there have been drugs out who most of the minorities and brown, black, yellow, red, these drugs were never a national crisis. They were never a health concern. They were illegal and you went to jail. It tore up families. It tore up people. The jails are full of people with these drugs. And finally, you get a drug that is on the other side that's hitting the other side of the fence, like you said, Don. And now it's a national health emergency, not a crime as much anymore. And so a lot of taxpayer money will be going into this, trying to help the opioid people, but all of the people that are in the jails and everything, they also had drug issues also, but they weren't health issues. They were crime. What do you think about that, Ron?
That's an interesting point, and I can't disagree with it. First of all, I do want to make a comment that just like Don, the opiate crisis, or the drug crisis, but in my case, opiate crisis, has hit home. One of my brothers is addicted to painkillers and, to the point where he actually abuses them and mixes the painkillers with alcohol. And he basically, I guess, really cannot sleep unless he does that cocktail every night. And it's a dangerous game he's playing. But back to the point that you made, David, about black versus white, I do have to say, and I was going to make this point, that now that it's an opiate crisis and the coverage, at least that I see in the news down here, is white America. And you see it in Ohio and in West Virginia. This morning on Meet the Press, they had the fire chief from some county in West Virginia, and she was saying that it's more than an epidemic there. I mean, it's killing mothers and fathers. And I think she said the youngest victim was 12 years old and the oldest victim was 78. And she said it crosses all barriers. But I don't really believe that. I think, with the African-Americans, I think this is more, and, I may be totally off with this, but more of a white America problem. And just like you said, maybe that's why you're hearing so much about it now. I mean, I hate to bring race into this, but I think there may be some truth to that. You don't hear about the opiate crisis in South Chicago or, East LA or some other predominantly African-American communities. You hear about it in West Virginia, New Hampshire, Ohio, where it's mostly the white community that's being affected by this.
Right, and her concern was that now doctors have to pay and put a lot of money into it because the president has now called it a health concern, not a crime. It was a way to look at it. I never thought about that until she brought that up. What do you think, Frank?
Well, David, I I'm just flabbergasted because on one hand, the president could have went to a higher level than just calling it what he called it. It could have been in an all hands on deck experience of fighting this, but that would allow federal funds and to be put in play and federal people to be put into play, more federal people. I do agree. And the reason, one of the other part of being flabbergasted is that we've always had a drug problem, as it was just mentioned by the previous folks. in regard to this, but it's only now, and it's because, in my opinion, that it has attacked the white population, which kind of, and race is always in the play in the United States of America. Race is always in play. But it's unfortunate that we've got a lot of people sitting in jails for drugs. When now there's a card, we've got a pass card now for those people who are addicted to drugs. I do think that our pharmaceutical industries are at fault at this, and the doctors' prescriptions are at fault, but they're getting all a bailout as a result of this.
You know that there's one family that makes money, they've become billionaires off of this one drug. All the drugs were designed by one family has control over opioids. I didn't know this. And until I just did the research and found out that there's one family, and this one family has made billions of dollars on opioids. Now, no one has said, let's go after these people and close this down. They're still making the money. You know, it's amazing because they're the drug dealer. In drugs, you're, as a police officer, you're looking for where does it come from. You try to shut it down. The United States knows where it's coming from, but they're not trying to shut it down. So I'm concerned about you're making it a health cause, but you're not going after the root problem. Now, I guess I'm not a doctor, but there are no other kind of drugs that compare that will help, that you're going to let the opioids stay out there and doctors to write the prescriptions. What do you think, John?
David, you know what? It seems like we've always dealt with the symptom opposed to the root cause. Any drug addict will tell you that using drugs are only a symptom of the real problem. And America's in denial because, as was stated before, now they have a pass. There are many people in prisons today because of the use of heroin. Heroin is an opiate. Let's call it what it is. It's an opiate. And now opiate is the catchword for today. And,
right.
You know, the thing that gets me is now we can make money off of it. The government can make money off of it now. Where before, the big drug dealers were making the money, companies and the country was making the money, bringing drugs into the ghetto. I mean, drugs were sent to the ghetto to domesticize and paralyze and tear up families. And now it's a sickness, it's an illness, it's a ticket where we can now treat it and get money. It's all about the money.
Right.
It's a double standard, I think.
Why do you say that, Ron?
Well, because, you know, the pharmaceuticals are basically taking the place of the drug dealers back then, but they can get away with it because they're pharmaceuticals. And now it's the white people that are falling victim to the drugs. So now it's okay, and now you don't go to jail. Now you get treatment.
Wow.
Right.
You know, there's one thing that has just been annoying me for quite a while. That's the race thing. You know, I wish there would come a time when we don't have to pull out the race card. You know, for me, people are people when, you know, and each person I rate individually, not by race, never comes to me. But it's coming from the top way down now. And I don't know if America will ever not have that stigma on it. It's a terrible thing. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I think the main difference is you start looking at, you know, we're talking about heroin, we're talking about coke, and we're talking about weed and stuff like that. The problem is most of that stuff, you know, except for, I think, what, Colorado or a couple other states, most of those things are still illegal drugs. The opioids here now, and from what I have heard, it's, you know, it's a legal drug that's prescribed by doctors. And I think that's where you're now getting, you know, the difference. I don't know if you can blame the pharmaceutical companies for making this stuff as much as you can blame the doctors who are over-prescribing it. I mean, how many of us were rambunctious in school and, you know, we were just sent to the principal's office, got a crack on the ass, but, you know, how many of us back in that day were given Ritalin? I mean, look at how many kids today in grade school and everything else are on these drugs because they're hyperactive and things like that. So, you know, yeah, all of a sudden now it's come to a head, but I think it's come to a head more because now these drugs are legal. They're in plain sight. And unlike weed and coke and heroin where it's, you know, backdoor deals and stuff like that, this stuff is readily available over the counter.
Right. Wow. I don't know where we're going with all this, but I think as men, we're going to have to just toughen up a little more in terms of, I think, where we take our kids, because we're teaching our kids that you have medication. I mean, especially kids that are in foster care worse, because I've never seen kids that are getting pills for anything. If you're too active, you get a pill to slow down. If you can't get to sleep, get a pill to go to sleep. If you can't wake up, you get a pill to wake up. They're functioned by these pills. And I'm just concerned that, you know, what we're doing to our kids these days, as men, we're going to have to be stronger in our decisions on, yes, the doctor said so, let's give them this pill. No, because I remember Ritalin, that was the worst pill, and there wasn't a kid that wasn't getting it. You know, he was too active. He is too rambunctious in class. Well, give him Ritalin, you know, and that, come to find out, worst drug ever. Anyway, let's move on, because we could talk about this all day. But one of the things that I thought surprising, and I think it caught everybody a little off guard, was Jimmy Carter, who said that the media is tougher on Trump than any other president in memory. And is it because there's more media now, or is that the president causing a lot of disturbance? What do you think, John?
Jimmy's senile. He's got a peanut allergy. What's he talking about? How dare him?
A peanut allergy, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, come on. What's a Democrat doing coming to the rescue of Donald Trump? That's ridiculous. There's got to be something wrong with him. He bumped his head.
I saw that. I was like, who? I had to read it twice. Jimmy Carter. What do you think about
Is he an apple or a banana?
What do you think? What do you think, Bruce? Carter's coming.
Then we'll get into the apple banana joke, which you guys know what I'm referring to. I hope you know. I think we've gotten so far apart in the middle ground and drawn our line. There isn't one line between the Democrats and Republicans now. There is a gorge. There is a Grand Canyon between the two. And how dare you, as John said, anybody from another party or another label can never, ever agree with anybody else. And that goes both ways. So, and we out here on the sidelines just shake our heads like, these guys and gals are never going to agree on anything ever again. And that's exactly the opposite of what they're supposed to be doing. They can have different opinions. They can have different points of view. They can come up with different answers. But for gosh sakes, when you need to, you got to come together and compromise on one solution. And that is totally disappearing. I mean, and when it happens, it's so rare that everybody says, well, somebody must owe somebody, somebody must have dirt on somebody, somebody must be crazy. And that's, you know, that's the way it's becoming, and it's anything but good. It's terrible. It really is.
Right. All right. What I want to do, though, is I'm going to open the conversation to the panelists, and let's talk about anything they want to talk about. I mean, there's so much going on. I want to make sure that I hit some of the points that panelists have on their minds. So I'm going to start with John. What is it that you would like to talk about today?
Well, I'll tell you, I guess there's two things, but I guess – the main thing is, and unless you're watching or following Major League Baseball, not too many people are going to, you know about this or hear about it. But game three, Houston Astros player had hit a home run off of LA Dodgers pitcher and made a racial gesture towards the pitcher. And the pitcher is Hugh Darvish, Asian American. And it went to the commissioner, and basically the commissioner said, listen, and you know what, I don't want to punish 24 guys on the team for one individual making a mistake who happens to be one of their better players. And what we're going to do is we're not going to suspend him during the World Series, but we're going to suspend him for the first six games of next season. And while we do that, we're going to suspend him with pay. So I kind of thought that was a little bit interesting to see that happening. I think Major League Baseball kind of made a bad decision. Sitting him for one game probably would have, you know, made a bigger impact. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
Wow. What is the second thing you want to talk about?
I'm sure, I don't know if we're going to get to it or not, but, you know, some of these Republicans that aren't running for re-election, and one of was Jeff Flake, where a lot of people, you know, he gets up there and makes criticizing, you know, remarks about Trump and everything else. And it turns out that when you do a little bit of research, the guy was only polling less than 18% in Arizona, wasn't going to win the election. So he basically used his loss here, you know, as a way to in front of Congress, try to embarrass the president. So those are the two things.
Okay, what about you, Bruce? Who would you like to talk about?
Well, something I just learned, maybe you guys are on top of this more than I am, maybe not, probably 10 minutes ago, this ad about the apple and the banana, and CNN has just put out an ad, and they are having, everybody's having a field day with this thing. It's very simple. It's very much to the point. If you haven't seen what I'm talking about, when we're done here, Google it, and you'll see it. It's a very short ad, shows an apple. You know, this is an apple, this is an apple. Some people say it's a banana. Some people think it's a banana. You know where I'm going with this, but in fact, it's an apple. And some people might use capital letters, so you know who they were digging at. Okay, enough said. The interesting thing now is, on that, is now somebody has come out with, this is a banana, they show a banana, this is a banana. Some people might tell you it's not a banana, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're doing this parody on everything now. It is, you got to laugh to some degree, and a lot of things that are seriously meant are said in jest, or said as a joke. So CNN put this out and probably spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to create this ad. And, I mean, again, they are so far apart on your opinions on whether it's effective, brilliant, or absolutely ridiculous. You got to check it out.
I'm confused. What is the reason that CNN is doing apples and bananas?
Well, think about it, David. They show an apple, not an apple computer, the fruit, an apple. And,
yeah, I'm looking
and
at
they go through it. They use the symbolism. I don't think the fact, they're just saying, their point of view is, you know, an apple by any other name is still an apple. And facts, no matter what you want to call them or dress them up to be, are facts. Well, no one would disagree with that fact statement. What they're disagreeing with is, you know, CNN says everybody might be trying to tell you that this apple really isn't so. And they're, yeah. And that as a result, don't believe the fact that it's anything but. And we tell the truth. They're trying real hard to, you know, fight against this fake news idea. You haven't seen the ad?
Pardon me?
You have
not
seen
the ad
yet?
I'm looking at it now, and it's explaining that it's, you know, it goes in deep detail about this is an apple on a male voice as a piano idles aimlessly, and then some people might try to tell you it's a banana. They scream banana, banana, banana. So I don't know.
Right.
I have to into it because they might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana, but it's not. It's an apple. The apple thus establish a tagline, facts first.
That's right.
Then comes the logo.
What CNN is trying to say is, CNN is saying, we're telling the truth. And if anybody tells you anything different, we're reporting the truth, and any other label you put on it is not true. So, and of course, the opposite side is just flipping it on them and going the other way with it.
So this is a really the Trump fake news. They're trying to establish that they're not fake news. Is that what it is?
Correct. Correct.
So it's actually going after the president of the United States, right?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. That's, just want to make sure that I got it right.
Part of it is the all caps. You know, some of, I guess, I don't follow the president's tweets, but the ones that are in your face when you try and listen to all kinds of news, you know, he uses a lot of capital, all cap letters to make his point, to emphasize a point. So that's where that comes in, you know, subtle connection.
Okay. Wow.
Has anybody else seen that ad?
Well, I can't say I have.
I don't think so. Is it
no?
New? No.
So yeah, I guess it really is as new as I thought. I just saw it like 10 minutes before the show.
No, the ad has been out for over a week. I've seen it
last
week in California. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, it's been out. Yeah, it was out last week, early last week. Right after our phone call. CNN runs it, but it's also coming on my phone. I get it because I get CNN news and other news things. So it's proliferated. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it has, and there's every parody you can imagine. You know it's going to be on Saturday Night Live next.
But
I think it's quite funny.
Yeah.
But is it solid? I mean, does it – why? Why is everybody going after everybody? First of all, why is the president going after everybody? And is he starting – I mean, every time you know that Trump tweets, it's about Clinton right now because of the – Russian Pope thing. So he goes after her every time he tweets, and so now CNN's going after him. What you know?
Well, next week the FBI will be after him, David.
Pardon me?
Probably Monday or Tuesday we'll know the lineup for the and people that have been already indicted or going to be indicted next
right.
week, or who have secretly been indicted. He may be one of them.
Wow. All right, so Frank, you're there. Why don't you tell us what you talk about?
Well, top of my agenda would be police brutality. And the second item would be the people that are in America that somehow the president or some people do not want to come to terms with their situation, their immigration situation. And use of immigration terms as well. So that would be the second thing. And if I had a third time, it would be about our potential and close process of getting into war and nuclear war at that.
I want to talk about that piece, the nuclear war, because it seems that North Korea has taken back page on most of all the other news, but I think it is more... Because when you keep seeing these little articles now on 5th or 6th page that keep saying that it's more, it's more active than ever right now. So I don't know why we're not really talking about it like we should, but it's more imminent.
Yeah,
than
the way.
Before.
Yeah, the way I see it. I don't know if you're aware of it, but last week, concurrently during the time that the Apple and banana thing came out. The authorization was signed by the president of the United States to allow armed forces people who are retired to be recalled to active duty. Now, the genesis of this has to do with the shortage of pilots. You know, I guess when you're fighting, and this is me putting my spin on it, but I guess fighting a war for 18 years, it's hard to retain people to fight and prosecute the war. So the Air Force has a shortage in there, a critical shortage. But the Air Force right now is refusing, and they're also advertising that they're not going to enact or take advantage of that law, that authorization the president just authorized. So technically right now, if you're in the armed forces and you're retired and you're a critical billet, as they see, not as you see, you could be recalled to active duty. So typically what happens is when you get recalled to active duty, there's generally a 6-month buildup. So once you see that process take place, as I noted last week on my Facebook page, once you see that process come up, you can expect 6 months thereafter you're going to be in a full-fledged war.
Wow. What do you think about that? Don, what do you think about that?
Frank, you're right on target. In fact, Frank brought up my two topics. I'll start with Korea. I've always said, and you know I've always said, that we're headed for a war. And I say that unapologetically. It seems like every time America wants to make money, we go to war. And North Korea is a major topic in my life because I see us headed down the wrong road as far as negotiation with this situation. And also dealing with it the wrong way. It's not a very good situation that we're in with North Korea. I don't think we have the right people negotiating and dealing with this situation at all. And then the major question is, who's going to be indicted tomorrow morning? Who's going to be indicted tomorrow morning? And 45 has already gotten out in front of it by saying, I have the ability to pardon you. Don't worry. I don't care if you are indicted. You're not going to jail because I'm the big man. I'm the big guy. I can pardon you. And, you know, this is a crazy mixed up world, man. I mean, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And I just don't like the way we're headed in this country. I'll rest right there.
All right, let me take a poll. Ron, do you think we're headed for war?
I do, and that was going to be one of my topics. And I think it's, you know, Trump isn't the first president to deal with North Korea, but I think he's going about it, in my opinion, in the wrong way, because he is coming across as a bully. And, of course, Kim Jong-un is not going to, you know, he's his own lunatic, so to speak, bully. So, you know, I think, and I said this, you know, many, many shows ago, that I definitely think we're headed to conflict with North Korea. And, you know, it's scary what can happen to Seoul in South Korea and Guam and, you know, maybe even parts of the U.S. I mean, who knows what can happen? These are scary times. And, you know, I think, in my opinion, Trump has said all the wrong things. You know, he's basically, you know, enticing North Korea to go to war. By the words and by his tweets that he uses, and not being very diplomatic at all. And I know that he says diplomacy has never worked in the past, but guess what? War is not a good thing. I mean, unless like Don said, you know, you're trying to make money, and you know, then maybe that is the reason.
All right, let me finish my poll here. Bruce, do you think we're headed for war?
I think I'm gonna be the exception to the rule here and say no, but I'm gonna qualify it a great deal. Okay. What I mean by that is I don't think we're going towards imminent war that's gonna happen. I think we are definitely heightening the sensitivity and the potential, the tenseness of war happening. I'll put it that way, but. I don't think either side, it's like they're going, now you move a little closer and you move a little closer and you do this and you do that, each waiting for the other one to make the first move. I think the fact that I don't think either side, as crazy as I think the Korean situation is. I don't think either one of them wants to make the first move. I think they're pounding their chests. They're saying they're ready. They're taunting each other. That raises all the tension. But I don't think anybody's going to make a first move to start a war. At least I don't think so right now.
So how is it going to end then?
Good question, Ron. Do they eventually come to some way to I don't want to use the word diplomatically, in words other than weapons, come to a conclusion? Maybe. Do I know what that is or when it might happen? No. But I don't. And short of a mistake that someone does or pushes the wrong button, I don't think either one of them is going to start it. If anybody starts it, I think the issue of Korea trying to attack a province of ours or a possession of ours like Guam, that could happen. But that's an American point of view. I mean, they might be thinking of it just the opposite. So I really don't think – I honestly don't think someone's going to make the first step intentionally.
All right. John, do you think we are headed toward war?
No.
Okay. Why?
I don't think North Korea is dumb enough. I mean, we don't need nuclear weapons to destroy that company or that country. I mean, it would make no sense for them. You know, it really wouldn't. What do they have to gain attacking us? Nothing, because they will be destroyed so fast they won't even know what hit them. And so I don't think he. I mean, the guy's he's a lunatic, but he's not crazy. Maybe I don't know, but I just don't think he's willing to sacrifice his country for that. I don't know.
Well, all right, Don. You think we're headed for war?
Yes, I do. I think we're headed for war. Someone asked a few moments ago, "How do we end this?" Well, let's come to some speculation here. Inadvertently hit the wrong button. Well, hitting the wrong button is hitting the wrong button, and the wrong button will proliferate a war. And money, we went that way so many times by financially bailing out the bully in North Korea, giving him money, that won't fly anymore. 45 is so impacted with making his statement and delivering on his word. I mean, the United States will destroy that country. As John said, it'll be a hands-down bully move. But the thing is, we don't know what's going to happen once we do that, and we don't know who North Korea is aligned to that we don't see.
Well, we know who they're and aligned to.
You're right, Frank. You know who they're aligned to. And the thing
we're
is,
aligned
will
to,
they step up? Will they step
up? Well, they've
up?
Already they've already put out a warning 2 months ago that if the United States starts a war with North Korea, United States is in trouble, and I believe that because we can't fight the Chinese and win, and we can't fight the Russians and the Chinese and win, and we can't fight the Russians, the Chinese, and the Iranians and win, and we can't fight the Afghanistan rebels or the people that are involved in that and win all those simultaneously, and we can't fight the people in Africa that we are now pursuing as well. So we cannot and will not annihilate, contrary to what's been said, the North Koreans, because if we annihilate the North Koreans, we also are annihilating the South Koreans.
Now, Frank, you just hit the chain. That's
you
the chain
have
effect
a,
that I was speaking.
Yeah.
It's the chain effect.
You cannot release nuclear weapons and then put a curtain up and expect the fallout for those nuclear weapons to be in the north part of a country when you have a southern annexation. And you can't expect that fallout not to affect China, and you cannot expect it not to affect that whole peninsula, including Japan, et cetera. So I think this is what I think. I think we're in an impossible situation with an impossible leader in our country. and with an impossible leader in their country. And I don't see it just I see it as a catastrophic war, world war III, that will include the Europeans as well as the Middle East.
I have a question for the panelists.
Go ahead.
If I may, David.
Sure.
My question is, do you all think that the U.S. has the inherent right to say that the Korean Peninsula shall be denuclearized when we have nuclear weapons?
I don't think it's the U.S.'s decision. That decision was made by the U.N., same with Iran.
Yeah, but it's basically the U.S. leading the charge, isn't it?
Well, because
no,
we're the only one willing to spend money to back up the U.N.
No, the Iranians have a right to nuclear weapons, and so do the North Koreans, and so do any other country that wants to have nuclear weapons, unless they've signed some type of treaty that they've agreed to not to have it. And right now, that's the way the world is. Anybody that wants a nuclear weapon can buy it, get it. The United States does not have the right to protect, to prevent that from happening, but the United States may feel it's in their best interest to attack that country just because it has been. We have never authorized nuclear weapons in Pakistan or in India, but they have nuclear weapons, Pakistan or Israel. We've never authorized that. We've never agreed to it, but they have nuclear weapons. And so, I mean, if you are a country leader in Africa or anyplace else, what do you want to get? You want to get nuclear weapons. And so, and that's so that the United States cannot push you around.
All right.
I got a question. What country have we ever invaded that hasn't attacked us first?
Well, we had an invasion during Colin Powell's experience a couple of times where we went over to save a country that supposedly was in a fight with a neighboring country, and we certainly came in as an invasion-style force. I do remember that. Okay, I do remember going down to Panama.
We were acting on behalf of the Kuwaiti government.
Let me finish. I'm answering your question. We invaded Panama, okay? And I was on active duty when we invaded Panama, and I was there with the invading forces, not actually in Panama. And we have invaded Caribbean countries in the recent past as well. We tried to invade Cuba, and we lost. That's before I came in the Navy, during John F. Kennedy's time, and we lost that. So we are an invading country. We tried Somalia, and that didn't work out very well for us as well. So there's a whole lot of countries that we typically try to invade, and the reason why we try to invade them is because we have some business interests connected with them. But we put it under the guise of freedom. But mostly, our freedom is connected to our business interests.
All right. Frank.
I want to add one thing to what Frank just said. I don't disagree that some things are done and for monetary reasons and business reasons, but there's always two sides to the coin. We always seem to dwell on the fact that we're some kind of a domineering, monstrous country that wants to control the world. Maybe at one time and from president to president, that thinking is stronger or less strong. But let's not forget that we're a very humanistic, very giving, very supportive, one of the best countries in the world that does a lot of good. And we never seem to talk about that very much.
That is a good point, Bruce.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk about it, Bruce. Go ahead.
That's like saying that we are also a Christian country. So we ought to talk about that also, okay? And I'm for the United States of America, but what I'm pointing out in my dissertation to you all is that some of the times that we rally the troops and get people excited, it isn't about what it's supposed to be about, okay? So, for instance, when we were in Vietnam, we were in Vietnam before the war was actually declared, and we were there supposedly fighting communism, right? And so that's, and we thought that if that country fell to communism, that the whole entire world would fall to communism. So that was our doctrine, to prevent that dice roll. And we've come into other countries on that. But it could be for sugar cane. It could be, you know, South America. There's a lot of countries that really dislike us and don't accept the premise that you just stated. And there are some Americans that are coming to that same feeling. So I would hold off on getting too high on the stool on that rhetoric about we are a good country. I think we try to do good, but I think that sometimes we are criminal in our actions towards other countries.
Well, but Frank, I can't totally disagree with what you said, but just because we're not perfect, and none of us are, and the one person that was, at least in my religious beliefs, got crucified, doesn't make us a ominous ogre country. We're not perfect. We never will be. I think one of the things we learned very quickly, maybe we should have learned it a long time ago, but I think we've finally gotten enough hard lessons to learn it, that we shouldn't be going around nation building and trying to turn other beliefs and other ways of living into democracies. I think we've learned that. If we're going to go in and fight the battle and help win the war, then it's for the purpose, it better be for the purpose of letting those people then live the way they want to live and not be suppressed by some dictator or overburdened by someone, but basically give them the freedom to make their choice, not to make them live in our kind of democratic freedom. And I think we're learning that lesson better now. I really do.
Well, I would, on another topic at another day, maybe I would discuss with you, debate with you, the interest on nation building that we've had. And I don't agree with your statement on it. I will tell you this: the reason why we got into it is that we have an excess capability in the armed forces of the United States, contrary to what's been stated on this show in the past. That was the genesis for getting into nation building. What do we use these smart people we have that are trained in the military? Because now we have a peace dividend, and the peace dividend is with the reduction of nuclear weapons primarily between us and Russia. And so that's why we got into nation building, is because we had an excessive amount of people in the armed forces, and we could put them to good and not stand them down. We had to stand nuclear weapons down, but we didn't have to stand our conventional capability.
Right. So, Frank, you believe we are or are not? I think I know the answer, but I didn't ask you. Are you?
I think that before we have our current president that was elected, I thought that the only time in my lifetime that I've ever been concerned about who has the nuclear football and who would release it. I was concerned about the candidate at that time, who's now become the leader of this nation, inadvertently or purposely releasing that nuclear holocaust. And so now with our issue about Iran, you know, if this abrogation of the treaty happens between Congress and the president, then Iran will go immediately back to producing their nuclear capability in an outward form, not as a secret form. And we initially gave Iran the capability and the technology to do the nuclear weapons, and so they have a burning, you know, since Jimmy Carter was president, the Iranians have a real reason to hate us, a bona fide reason, because we supported a dictator, the Shah of Iran. We supported a dictator in many countries, including Vietnam, etc. And this is the counter argument to us being a good and loving and abiding nation, okay? And letting people decide themselves. In fact, our decision has to always do with oil or wealth, and that's how we basically do it. We don't do it on a Christian basis, okay? If we did do it on a Christian basis, we would free the entire world, okay, right now. But we don't do that. So, yes, right. I expect that I expect that if we mess it up real good, we'll have a catastrophe in the making in the short while.
All right. So we have three yeses and two noes in this panel feel that we're going to war. So that puts it, a little more to the yes side. So we're thinking we are going to war. So then I have a question. The young men of today are not like young
wait
men.
Wait a minute, David, before you go further, David, we'd like
sure.
to hear your point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think, David?
I think we are headed towards some kind of conflict. I'm not sure if it's going to be a full out-and-out war, because, like many of you said, I don't understand what North Korea sees of gaining. I think they would lose, but I also think that the young man running it is a hothead, and people around him are afraid they'll lose their life if they tell him anything. So I do think there'll be some kind of a conflict. But I don't know to what extent if it'll be a full out-and-out war, because it's an out-and-out war. Countries will then pick a side. And I don't think the United States is ready to see that happen with the current administration that we have in terms of both sides of the counter there. I'm not sure. That's what I think. But I want to ask this question.
That sounds like a maybe, David. That's not good.
No, I'm saying, okay. It wasn't ruled out that I couldn't say that. but my question is, with the young men that we have today, their theories and the way they are, do you think the United States is ready to go into a war? And I guess could probably help me here, because I have been in the military and I do know how tough it is, and I do know that in previous times when you went to the military, in your mind what you're supposed to do. Young men today will tell you what they're not going to do. And so my question is, do you think the United States is ready on a basic level to put a rifle in a young man's hand and send him out to defend us? What do you think, Bruce?
It's kind of a hard question to answer. I guess I would comment this way, that we have to be very careful that the younger generation sees the whole picture, the good and the bad of our country, and all of the truth, not part of the truth or part of the picture. And I'm slowly getting the feeling that, and by talking to some of the youth that I talk with on a regular basis and mentor with, the only thing they see is an ogre nation, and that socialism and some of the things that you just touched on would be a good thing. I haven't lived through any kind of socialism like that, but we know people, our elders, that have, and they have no concept of what that really is. And I just keep getting the feeling that our youth are not getting the whole picture of what is the truth, so they can make their own informed decision. They're only getting part of the picture. And I fall back to our press, of all the presses, of all types, and urge them to somehow change their ways so that they give the whole picture, not just part of the picture.
If they don't,
then those people are going to have a very skewed point of view on which to make their life decisions on.
Right. Right. Don, what do you think about young men today and war? Do you think we are ready, and do you think our military can train them as quickly as we would need? If we went to war tomorrow, you know how many people we would have to put into the military? That, you know, we would be a big deficit of young men in the United States, because they would have to go to war. Do you think we're ready for that?
David, this is going to be very, very interesting, because, you know, I'm going to tell you the truth. With the way the media is today, I don't think we're going to get as much participation among our youth today as we did back in the 60s and 70s. And we're going to see it the most major revolt in American history of people anti-war like never before. Young people have become more self-centered and more opinionated than back then. And they don't want to go to war. I mean, come on. I mean, this new generation is not in that mindset that we were in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. They're not in that mindset.
You said that you don't think we're going to get the participation. But they're drafted. They have no choice.
You're going to see a pushback like never before. They got drafted, true enough, but you're going to see a pushback like never before.
What do you think, John? Do you think we are young men and women, because now that's ended up, are ready for a war? Do you think we have mentally are going to be well taken care of by the people that are drafted?
Yeah, I do. And the reason why is they volunteered to join. And I think that's a lot different mindset than if you go out and draft somebody. I think you're going to have better trained, better fighters, better people who are willing to listen and take commands of somebody who, you know, like I said, volunteered to be there, than going off the street and getting one of these new millennials. You know, the millennials of today, from what I can tell, they're all a bunch of pacifists. You know, they don't fight anymore for what they believe is right. Back in the old days, you know, if we had a problem on the schoolyard, we went out and beat the crap out of each other for 20 minutes and it ended right there. Nowadays, you want to get attorneys, assault, and all of this other type of stuff. And I mean, it's, you know, we're raising a generation of candies, if you ask me. And yes, I'm 100% confident that the people that are in the military are getting trained properly. And I have absolutely no problem that they're going to want to defend this country and they're going to fight for the president. And I have no problem with it.
Well, I think the question, though, is there are those in the military, yes, but that's not enough. We're going to have to double the military in terms of people that are there to defend us. So the newer ones.
I think, you know, with drone pilots and things like that, you know, you're not going to have the wars of today are not going to be like, you know, World War One where we dug trenches. It's not going to be World War Two where we stormed the beaches. I mean, you're going to have more air cover. You're going to have drones. You are going to have, you know, weapons that can be fired from ships and submarines from miles away. So I think we learned in Afghanistan, you're not going to be able to have an invading force going into the mountains on some of these things. If you're going to destroy them, you're going to have to level them with, you know, huge amount of munitions. And so that's why, you know, we've got a lot of skilled people there that, you know, I mean, we've got drone pilots that are, what, half a country away flying these drones, you know, and taking out insurgents and things like that. So I think war has changed over the years, and I don't think you need as many soldiers, ground soldiers, you know, as we did back in World War One, and World War Two, Vietnam, Korea.
All right, we got about 90 seconds left, but what I wanted to say is we have people we're going to go to war, and I think we're not that happy of the millennials that are taking care of us, so we need to have that thought. But before we leave, just 90 seconds, I just wanted to ask one question, quick question. Halloween is next week. People will be out, and I just want to ask you a quick question. If you have
Halloween is this week, David.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's Tuesday.
Halloween is this week.
Tuesday, sorry. I'm thinking. Anyway, Tuesday is Halloween. You had to pick a costume. What would you be, Frank?
I think I'd be good enough being myself.
Oh, that would be scary, right. Frank. That would be scary.
No, you got to pick a costume.
That's what I'm talking about.
Don, who would you be?
Yeah, I'd be Don. He's a hell of a character.
You guys are not fun at all. Come on, Ron, who would you be?
I would be a Florida Power and Light employee.
A what?
A what?
FPL employee. Yeah. They're not very popular right now.
I wonder why.
Well, we only got a few seconds left, so I'm going to quickly, John, who would you be?
Well, number one, I'd be a train robber named Longcoat. And second, I would be Bernie Sanders, so I can steal candy from the good kids and give it to the lazy ones.
Okay. Who did I ask? Bruce, did I ask you?
Mahatma Gandhi.
Oh, my God. So you're going to walk around with a towel. Okay, cool.
You didn't expect, no. It's got nothing to do with the clothing.
Now.
It's got everything to do with the attitude, you kinky son of a so-and-so.
Wouldn't he be allowed in our country today?
What?
Pardon me?
Would he be allowed in our country today?
Maybe not. I'd have to bust my way in.
We're going to have to go. We hope you have a nice week. Be careful out there trick-or-treating. Make sure you take care of men. Go trick-or-treating with your kids. Don't let them out there themselves.
Absolutely.
Get out in the streets with them.
See you guys. Happy Halloween. Have a good week.
Yeah, everyone. Panelists, you guys have a great Halloween. I'll talk to you again next week. All right.
And keep your heads up. Antifa wants to play games on Saturday, November 4th.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
Too bad they don't have anything scheduled in Michigan. I'm sitting here bored.
Yeah.